This is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Good morning, sports fans. A pleasure to have you here for the Friday show. On Locks of the Week Radio with Dave Medina, that is myself, the host. Well, I'm a bit conflicted today, and the reason is pretty simple, because we've lost a lot of really big personalities today. Three people have died this week. I didn't mention the first one, Ed McMahon. That was way back on, that was on Tuesday, I think. And then Farrah Fawcett died in the morning on Thursday. And then the big one, Michael Jackson, the king of pop, dead at the age of 50 after cardiac arrest, flown into the UCLA Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead sometime in the afternoon. What a day. I mean, so we'll get into that in a minute, or we'll get into that in a few minutes. But first, I wanted to spend some time to talk about the NBA draft tonight. So, and we might have some other surprises for you later today in the show. But right now, let's look into what happened in the draft. Let's take a look at who we have selected. Let's go into these one by one. You know, sometimes we count these things up, but today we're counting down. So we'll start with the number one pick. Here we go. The Clippers, number one pick in the draft, they select Blake Griffin, the obvious choice, the 100% choice. No doubt about it, no suspense there. Good pick for the Clippers because he's the best player to be taken in the draft, according to many experts. A lot of folks may not be sold in his ability to play and post up because he might not have the size, but he could have some potential there, so I think the Clippers made the wise move. Memphis goes with Hasheem Thabeet, number two. I think it's a wasted pick. Thabeet's got nothing. I mean, the guy is so weak and soft on the inside. I don't think that's going to be much of a factor, if any. I'm not even sure how he ended up so high in the draft, honestly. I don't really see it. Number three, James Harden was picked by the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, the Oklahoma City Thunder have had some good picks lately. They picked up Kevin Durant a few years ago, and today James Harden. I like it. I like the move. I don't know a ton about James Harden, but he played in Arizona State, so he can light it up. I say it's a good pick, and it's a solid selection at that pick, so I like it. Number four in the draft goes to the Kings, and they selected Tyreek Evans. I have not really seen Evans play that much, so I'm going to trust the Kings on this one. And then two big picks by the Minnesota Timberwolves, and I suspect these two picks were from the Celtics. With the fifth pick in the draft, the Timberwolves get Ricky Rubio, the big prospect out of Spain. Everybody's talking about Ricky Rubio. Oh, Ricky Rubio, Ricky Rubio, Ricky Rubio. Well, we're going to see what happens here with Ricky Rubio. We shall see. But so that's the big pick there for the Timberwolves with number five. And at number six, the Timberwolves again. They get Johnny Flynn from Syracuse. A pretty solid pick. I think Flynn was probably their best guard, I think, during the postseason for the Syracuse Orangemen. So I like Johnny Flynn. That's not a bad pick. So on we go. Number seven, the Warriors get Stephen Curry. Not really sure what they're going to do with that because they have enough people that can shoot. So another shooter, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. They might trade him. We'll see what happens. The Knicks, with the number eighth pick, select Jordan Hill. Kind of a head-scratcher, honestly. And then with the ninth pick, the Toronto Raptors get DeMar DeRozan. Well, I'm not really sure how good that guy's going to be. He may not even end up being anything. So the ninth pick in the draft, who knows? The Milwaukee Bucks had the 10th pick. They get Brandon Jennings, who I think is going to be all right. But, again, another guard being taken in the draft. A lot of guards taken in the first 10 picks. Let's move on to the second 10. The 11th pick in the draft goes to the Nets, and they select Terrence Williams. Yet another point guard, point forward, they call it. He should be okay. The Charlotte Bobcats get Gerald Henderson out from Duke. Henderson's got that good mid-range game, so I think he'll be all right for Charlotte. I'm not sure how he's going to compliment the rest of the team, specifically guys like Gerald Wallace, except they got two Geralds on the team, but other than that, I don't really see what he's going to contribute right off the bat. Here's an interesting pick. At number 13, the Indiana Pacers select Tyler Hansbrough. When he was in college, he was one of the more complete players in the ACC. The all-time leading scorer for the ACC, Tyler Hansbrough. But it's kind of like when you're dominating your own little league and your own little circuit in your neighborhood, you move on to the big time, and then you start meeting a bunch of guys who are about bigger than you, but can do some of the same things. I'm not really sure how well he's going to play. But if Kevin Love is any indication, I think he'll be a serviceable player. Now, he's not necessarily going to be the guy. They already have Danny Granger, and it's not as if he's going to be that tough on the inside, but he'll be okay. He's not going to be as bad as people think, and certainly he's not expected to be anything fantastic in the NBA, but I think it's a good pick. The 14th pick goes to the Phoenix Suns. They selected Earl Clark. And do you remember Earl Clark? Earl Clark, for those of you who don't remember, he's a guy from Louisville. And he was pretty decent throughout the year. And in college, he had averaged 10.6 points a game. But more importantly, he had 728 assists, which equal, and his greatest total, of course, came in 2009 when he had 119 assists for the year for the Louisville Cardinals. I think Earl Clark could be pretty interesting for the Phoenix Suns. Maybe possibly a guy that could come off the bench and spell Steve Nash, and maybe a trading chip. It's hard to say. Next, the Pistons with the number 15th pick get Austin Day. No clue about him. But check this out. Number 16 goes to the Bulls, and they select James Johnson, and I like this guy. The guy out of Wake Forest, he's been pretty good all year long. I think he's going to be there for rebounds. I like James Johnson. I think the Bulls did a pretty good job picking him, and the Bulls have not been bad in the draft of late. They got Ben Gordon, and they picked up Derrick Rose. James Johnson will be a good complement to that team. A lot of youth on that team. They'll probably hustle for balls. I think the Bulls could be interesting for the next season. Now, a lot of people are thinking, well, the Bulls are on the way up. Now, I don't know about that. But I think they're going to be competitive throughout the year, and James Johnson will help. So that's a good pick. Onward. Now, number 17 in the draft goes to the 76ers. They pick Drew Holiday. I don't know about Drew Holiday, so I actually don't have any idea what's going to happen with him. So if they keep him, I think the 76ers are fine, but again, they probably need Elton Brand to become better for that team to really compete anyway. So yeah, why not? Go after a guy that with the best available player, whether he's the tall guy or not. Drew Holiday is not a bad deal. And, well, Drew Holiday, you want length. You're going to get it from Drew Holiday anyway. Although he is a guard, he is 6'3", and he can definitely spout himself throughout the court. He played at UCLA last year. I think it was just sort of a transitional thing for him, and he didn't really have any commitment to the Bruins. But he's going to take some work, no question. Now, with the 18th pick in the draft, the Minnesota Timberwolves, with their third pick in the same draft, in the first round, no less, picked Ty Lawson from North Carolina. Ty Lawson is very, very speedy. He's very good. Great hustle. But I don't know how healthy he's going to be. That's my only problem with Ty Lawson. Can he keep his foot healthy? I mean, he's getting problems in college. Who knows how well he's going to hold up in the NBA? We'll see. So finally, let's just round out the final two. The Hawks with the 19th pick select Jeff Teague. Yet another little guy for the Hawks. I'm not impressed with this. Jeff Teague could end up being good. And yes, he fits in with the transition offense that the Hawks play with. But they need size. They need some kind of toughness on the inside. They got nothing right now. The whole team's like 6'5", 6'6", and below. I don't really know how this is going to help the Hawks. But that's what they did. So they got some strength role that I suppose that's the idea there with the Hawks. Finally, with the 20th pick in the draft, the Utah Jazz select Eric Maynor. Eric Maynor, who I do not recognize at all, but he comes from Virginia Commonwealth, and I guess he's okay. that's your top 20 in the NBA draft. The rest are really not that important. Although I did see that the Hornets got Darren Collison. Who knows how good he'll be, but I remember him from UCLA. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. Unless, perhaps, Taj Gibson and Wayne Ellington decide to make some solid contributions. I don't really see anything else to go with. Well, I did get a kick out of the Trailblazers getting another Spanish-born player or Spanish-origin player from España. That was kind of funny. Pretty interesting NBA draft this year, though. Pretty interesting. And I think the draft also was augmented by two trades that made it quite remarkable. There was the trade where that sent Shaquille O'Neal from the Phoenix Suns out to the Cleveland Cavaliers in exchange for a bunch of spare parts, and quite literally, like stuff right out of the junk drawer. And then there was a rumored trade that could have sent Vince Carter to the Orlando Magic for Tony Battee, Courtney Lee, and another guy that whose name escapes me. That's a kind of a WTF if I've ever seen one. Yeah. That was quite a draft day in the NBA. Take a break here in the city. When we come back, the fall of a legend and the passing of the King of Pop. We'll be back. This is Dave in the City. Back out here in the city on Locks of the Week Radio, I'm Dave Medina, taking you through another hour of sports talk coverage. Today, we're going to really sidestep sports for just a few moments, and I'm going to bring up the death of a really, really amazing musical figure. I mean, yeah, the legend really didn't last as long as we had hoped, but Michael Jackson, the King of Pop, died today at the age of 50. Suffered a cardiac arrest earlier in the afternoon on Thursday, was rushed over to the UCLA Medical Center. It's actually by where Andrew Jacobson works, actually. And he was pronounced dead there. Officially announced sometime between 3 and 4 o'clock in local time, that's our time here, Pacific time, on Thursday. And it's shocking, it's just shocked the entire world. The entire world over is just gripping with the fact that Michael Jackson is no longer with us. And we grant you that he's far from a good human, you know, far from a, not good, but far from a model human being. I mean, certainly his life has been ripe with scandal and tragedy and controversy throughout the years. But today we're going to be talking about what he brought to us in music. And that obviously extends mostly from his beginnings when he was with Jackson 5 all the way up through the Dangerous album in 1991. And, you know, you look between those years, specifically the 80s, man, he was unbelievable. He was the man. Everybody wanted to be him. Everybody looked up to him, and his dancing style and his voice and his production values and his music were almost impossible to beat. You can never forget, especially if you grew up during those years, what he meant to pop music as a whole. He changed music. He changed the industry. And he was a huge figure in music. And you know what's really remarkable about Michael Jackson is that in his day, in his heyday, he wasn't really trying to make a stand or make a cause or try to alien, or, you know, he wasn't necessarily trying to be this political figure like guys like Bono would be, or even another guy whose time came way before it should have, John Lennon. He was just there making music, I think, and he was really good at it. And he's had not just one, but multiple signature moments throughout his career. And his breakout album, Off the Wall, when his first album, away from the Jackson 5, that really lent itself to a lot of success. Then Thriller was just a whole phenomenon unto itself. And The Moonwalk, which is really funny, that was introduced during a Motown special in 1983. I think it was the 50th anniversary of Motown. And that was where he introduced the movie. And it's really strange because he wasn't with Motown Records at it by then. Motown was when he was with the Jackson 5, but when he moved, when he became a solo artist, he switched to another label, Epic Records. So it was interesting that he was a part of that show, but he was extended the invitation, and rightfully so, by the powers that be. He ended up on the show, he had an appearance, and boy did he make it count. And that moonwalk became so huge, everybody was trying to do it. And it's an incredible dance move. I mean, it's like, you almost think it's magic. And a lot of what he did was really magical. I mean, my family was just such a huge fan of Michael Jackson and all the music he did all the way through. And just when you thought he couldn't be topped, he released Bad in 1987, and it was just another huge album. And then Dangerous came out, which was good. I thought it was pretty good. It wasn't as good as the other two, but it also had its own revolutionary and innovative moments. The Black or White video. I mean, that was one of the first usages of morphing, or one of the more popular and more of the more interesting usages of morphing in a video. And it was just a tremendous video. The Black or White song was just a tremendous video. Well done, well thought out. I mean, his videos were not just like, well, we're going to show him dancing around a lot. They were like theatrical productions. There was a sense and a purpose and a story behind every one of those musical videos he did. They had backstories, they had characters, they had plots. And let's not forget what he did with Captain EO. I mean, that was just a two-bit little ride at Disneyland or a little theater thing. And he made that thing great. Oh, man, I mean, we're going to really miss that guy, but, I mean, what he did to music. Now, since 1991, so this is now a really long time, nearly 20 years, he'd been known more for his own sad person, than his actual music. But, you know, through it all, he'd always been very talented. And I think I was talking with Jacob extensively about this a few minutes ago on the telephone, and he was saying, you know, even back in 2002, when he wasn't quite the king of pop anymore, he still had it. He had a song called, what was it? The song came out in 2002, Love of My Life, I forget. That, I'll figure this out, but, you know, he came out with a video which featured Marlon Brando, and it showed that, wow, you know, the guy still had it. He still had some talent, and he still was pretty good at those moves. And then I think around that same time, they did a tribute to Michael Jackson, and there was no malice, there was no tension, because everybody who was there to see it and everybody who was there to present it appreciated his music and his style. They appreciated that. And at the end, Michael Jackson himself came on and did his thing, and it was beautiful. So, you know, no man in life is ever perfect. Some are a little weirder than others. But you can't take away the accomplishments of any person. This extends to sports. When you speak about a guy like Pete Rose, for example, who was so good for the game, and he, in as much as his ability to play and his leading by example and his hustle, you can't suddenly just pretend it didn't happen just because Rose, quote, disgraced the game by gambling. And similarly, whatever Michael Jackson did in his transgressions with little children, or whatever he had done to wrong society, or whatever he had done against the code of ethics, including hanging a little kid out over a balcony, doesn't take away from what he did in music. And that's what it's always been about. You can't really just talk about, oh, well, the guy's a terrible guy, so then, you know, I don't care what his music was like. I think that's a little hypocritical. We don't know how good any of these people are in music anyway. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So for me, it's always about what he contributed to the music industry, and he contributed a lot. If he's not in the Hall of Fame for rock and roll, he should be. And granted, his genre isn't really a rock and roll genre, but he contributed a lot to it as well. If not directly, certainly indirectly. The whole style of music videos nowadays, or part of it, certainly, its inner fabric has been inspired by some of the things that he did. So this is the day to really just celebrate, I guess, but remember what was the king of pop, Michael Jackson, and he was huge. Now, we haven't really seen anything like that lately. And you know, like in the 50s, it was Elvis Presley who just dominated the industry. He was a huge figure. In the 60s, let's see, who was it in the 60s? But, well, the Beatles were certainly huge in the 60s. And when you talk about the 70s, I guess you could think about Elton John, because he was pretty ginormous, I think, in music. I'm trying to think of somebody else, but I can't think of anyone else. So the 80s, it was really, Michael Jackson was just it. Whenever Michael Jackson did something big, it was huge. And his concerts were just off the charts. I've never seen a concert where people fainted during the thing. But that was Michael Jackson. I mean, he was just so huge, he transcended everything. People of all backgrounds and people from wherever you go at least know who Michael Jackson was. And when most people think of him, I think they still think about all of that, all those amazing hits that he churned out throughout 30 years. And that goes back to the Jackson 5. It goes back to ABC 1, 2, 3, and plenty more. So what a day. And you know, all you had to do was walk around. You know, I was in the drive-thru, I saw a car playing a Michael Jackson song, The Way You Make Me Feel. My neighbor had two big signs that says, "We will miss you, Michael Jackson," with white balloons. I mean, this affects everybody. This is the kind of passing that really just is so touching. It touches the entire world, like very, very few personalities can. And I mentioned to Jacob, it sort of reminded me of John Lennon. I mean, but it's not quite as dramatic, certainly, because at least Michael Jackson died of his own natural causes, and it wasn't sudden. It was sudden, but I'm sorry. But what I meant was, it wasn't really, I mean, I guess the thing is, it wasn't as if Michael Jackson was in the middle of still being a huge, huge artist in the music industry at the time that he died. There were hints that he was about to make a huge comeback, but even so, it was at a point in time where he really was not that relevant to music. So that much it kind of takes away from the impact of the death, but not a whole lot. Because people still remember. People remember when they were waiting on bated breath for each new album to be released. And he wouldn't just release them every year. I mean, he meant to put all the effort in the world behind every piece of vinyl that came out, or every single album that he did. So it would be a few years before a new album came out. But all the while, the album that was already in place would just deliver these monster hits that would just last for generations. And then when the new album hit, it would just be it would be madness. Everybody would get into it. They'd buy the album, they'd purchase all these copies, and then the songs would be all over the radio. And the songs are, or many of them are timeless. Like, you still remember them today, 30 years after the fact, 25 years after the fact, you still remember a lot of these songs. We're never going to forget Michael Jackson, for better or for worse. And what that means to me is that we really lost a legend. Take a break here in the city. Back with more sports talk right after this. This is Dave in the City. Welcome back in the city. I'm Dave Medina, talking about sports. This day here on Friday, these shows have been getting tougher to do. You know, when there's a lot of sports going on, it's really easy to do the show. When we're doing football, it's easy to do the show. The stories can sometimes extend for days and days because the game, it's easy to talk about the game that just happened. And then halfway through the week, when you're running out of things to talk about, then you have the upcoming week, and then you've got things to talk about, too. It's like a roller coaster. You go up, 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 up. And then that's Wednesday. And then it goes down, 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 like that. And the NBA is all right, too, because you can get into trends. But once that's all over, then you're stuck talking about meaningless baseball games and series. Even a single game against two teams doesn't really mean anything. You gotta wait for two other games. You gotta wait out three games to make an evaluation of a team against another team. It's incredible how many games they play in baseball. So with that said, I think I'm gonna give you this. There's this tournament going on right now in South Africa in soccer. It's called the Confederations Cup. And nobody cares, except for one thing, that the United States is involved. And good for them. And they've advanced to the final round. Great. So, who is going to meet them? Well, it depended on what happened on Thursday and at night over in South Africa, but it took place, but over here it was in the afternoon. South Africa, the host country, was playing Brazil, one of the premier soccer countries on the planet Earth. Even though they had a decisive disadvantage because they were going to be playing in the host country stadium, you really were expecting a pretty decisive Brazil win, maybe 2-0 or 3-0. But instead, it was scoreless going into the last 15 minutes of the match. And finally, Brazil scored a goal, but a sloppy game all the way through. And Brazil mercifully survives and goes on to the final championship game against the United States. So this is going to be a huge match. I don't know precisely when they'll play. I think it's tonight or today. We'll see. The USA, Team USA has done a great job. They've won their way to this final in this Confederations Cup. That's huge. Big deal. Great. Fantastic. But they are going to get slaughtered tonight. And I don't want to be mean, because I know it's a country and everything, you know? It's a big deal, and I think even having advanced to the final is a huge deal for United States soccer. Because they usually don't do much in any tournament. So I think it's great. They don't even advance in their own tournament, the Copa America. So to see them here in the Confederations Cup, that's pretty cool. Yeah, they're going to get slaughtered, just like Team USA water polo did in the Olympics in the gold medal round. But it's still a cool story. Yeah, okay, so Brazil wins 3-0, 4-0, something like that. No biggie. It's a rare case where even though you didn't actually go all the way, it was a major success. So I think the United States did a pretty good job. Now, they're certainly not going to rest on their laurels. They're going to give it their best shot. They're going to be in the game, or in the match, I should say, for about half the game of the match. Terminology's throwing me off. They'll be in it for a while. So we'll see what happens. So Brazil, United States, should be fun. We'll see what happens. All right, we have here joining us here in the city our good friend Matt Connolly. He's joining us here. He writes for the Daily Nexus, and I wanted to bring him in for a couple of reasons. One, to usher him in and welcome him here to the podcast. This is his feature debut on the show, so we're all excited about that. What's up, Matt?
Too much, Dave. Just got off work a little while ago. Just hanging out right now.
Good deal. So, you know, on a night that a lot of stuff happened, geez, Michael Jackson died, good Lord, you know, NBA draft. But the reason we have you here tonight is because the story I wrote a couple of days ago, I thought that was pretty interesting. You know, the U.S. Open was last weekend at Bethpage Black in Long Island. And in the tournament was UCSB's very own Scott Lewis. I understand that he also had a moment with one of the world's premier golfers for one shining moment.
Yeah, it was actually with the man himself, Tiger Woods. It was in a practice round. They were putting on the same hole. Scotty didn't even recognize it. And then, sure enough, he puts his ball into the hole, goes to claim it, and Tiger's standing right above him. I'm sure that was an interesting moment for him. And, you know, he apologized at first. He was a little shy about it, saying, "Oh, sorry, Mr. Woods. You know, I didn't mean to get in your way." But Tiger, you know, chuckled it off, you know, being the nice guy that he is, and just said that, you know, he didn't have to apologize, that it was not to worry about it. Because, you know, everyone is, whether, you know, you've won a whole lot of majors like Tiger, or if you're a newcomer like Scott Lewis, everyone's entitled to their opportunity to play in the U.S. Open, and he had earned a spot just as Tiger had, so it was a nice moment for Scott.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, these are days that he'll never forget. Now that he's kind of come back from this, do you think he'll take some of the experience from the U.S. Open and apply it to his collegiate play in the next season?
Well, yeah, I certainly hope so. You know, actually, it's kind of funny because he walked onto the team as a sophomore, and, you know, he played a fair amount for the team last year, but he still wasn't considered probably one of the top players on the team. And, you know, an experience like the Open is head coach Steve Last of the UCSB golf team actually mentioned that, you know, playing in a big tournament like that full of pros, you can't really measure how much that can actually help your experience, even though, you know, it's only a few day long tournament. Just being there and having that experience and, you know, kind of, you know, gives you a lot of confidence too moving ahead. So I expect Scott to be a major player for the golf team in the next couple of years.
Yeah, that's going to be great. And the stories he'll tell on the team are just going to be priceless. It'll be awesome to see going forward. All right, well, you know, that's an interesting story, but also interesting tonight was the NBA draft. Did you get a chance to watch the draft last night or the tonight?
Actually, Dave, I was at work for the majority of the draft, but as I was in the press box working over the Caesar Osaka Stadium on UCSB campus, we were getting a couple guys with iPhones giving us updates with every pick, so I have a pretty good idea of what went down tonight, and definitely have some mixed feelings.
Yeah, I mean, you had some good, you had some bad, and you had some weird. I mean, like, for example, you took the Warriors taking Stephen Curry, and the Timberwolves taking three point guards. Who did well and who did badly in this draft?
Well, you know, Dave, I think it's kind of tough to measure winners and losers, especially considering we haven't, you know, seen any of these players pan out in the pros. As we all know, your college game doesn't necessarily translate over to the pros. You know, let's talk about the weird first, Dave. You mentioned Stephen Curry to the Warriors. Me being a Warriors fan, I have a lot to say about that. And initially, you think, wow, that's a lose. We kind of reached for him. You're not sure if it's, you know, being as light as he is, if his game's going to translate over. But and the fact that he's essentially the same player as Monta Ellis. But the thing is, there's a deal on the table now where the Warriors actually have a good chance to acquire Amari Stoudemire in a trade where they actually give up Stephen Curry, Andres Biedrins, as well as one other player. I believe it's Brandon Wright. So if that deal goes through, I'd have to call the Warriors a clear winner in this one.
Yeah, I think that was the idea going in. And I think if they do go for Stoudemire, that's a huge improvement for the Warriors, no question.
No doubt, and you mentioned the Timberwolves, and, you know, initially you look at what they did and just say, wow, you know, that's just not smart to draft three point guards, but you gotta look at it like this. You know, Rubio fell to them. He's supposed to be taken up by I believe, the Kings, or, you know, one of the teams beforehand, and, you know, despite his lack of athleticism, he was probably going to be a pretty solid point guard moving ahead, and, you know, swapping up Johnny Flynn before the Warriors could get their hands on him, you can't blame him. You know, a lot of times in draft day, you have to pick players by their value, not necessarily what position they are, and just kind of move forward from there. You know, I expect them to deal probably Ty Lawson, if I had to pick one name out of the hat, but I could definitely see them dealing Rubio as well, but they're probably going to hold on to Johnny Flynn, who I think is going to end up being the best NBA point guard of the trio, hands down.
You know, that may be, I'm kind of surprised to hear that, but that's not necessarily a bad point. You know, the thing about Lawson is, I don't know if he's going to stay healthy, and the thing about Rubio is we don't know enough about him. So you might have a point. Flynn, I like Flynn too.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, Rubio, I have some questions on him myself, you know, mainly on the defensive end. There's so many people look at his offensive game. Yeah, he's got a great IQ. He's got a great passing ability. But what a lot of people overlook is his defensive prowess against, you know, all these top point guards in the NBA. A lot of them very athletic point guards along the lines of a Johnny Flynn, who's about to be his future teammate, barring a trade. And, you know, so Rubio on the defensive end is a little shaky, but, you know, he's going to be a good player, I think. And I think Johnny Flynn really could end up being one of the top players in this draft. I think some people call it a reach to pick him where they did at six, but I don't know. I've seen him in college, Dave, in a lot of games with Syracuse, and wow, he really knows how to run the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen him too, and there's no question. He can definitely take over. Okay, so last question about the draft. Who do you see as a diamond in the rough here in the draft that kind of went a little bit lower, but he'll end up being a pretty good player? Did you see anyone that stood out to you in that respect?
You know, being a Warriors fan, it's real disappointing considering all the first-round busts they've had. But, you know, one thing I pay attention to a lot now, just because the Warriors have done a good job of it in the past, is second-round picks, kind of second-round sleepers. We've seen it with Gilbert Arenas, grabbing up Monte in the second round as well. And I think this year, there are a few players who slipped who might open some eyes. I think number one, Sam Young. You know, Sam Young was a great college player, and, you know, honestly, his moves, his one-on-one moves are a little weak, but his perimeter game has improved drastically, and I think he's going to be a star in the NBA, not a star, but a solid player in the NBA, as well as DeJuan Blair. You know, DeJuan Blair, he has some issues with his knees, obviously, but a player he reminds me a lot of is one Carlos Boozer, who my veteran Warriors passed up, I think, a handful of years ago. And, you know, he's an undersized power forward that no one thought could translate over. But if you've seen DeJuan Blair, how hard he works in the post at the college level, I think he's going to be a solid NBA player, particularly being mentored by Tim Duncan over there on the Spurs. So those are my second-round sleepers that I'd have to point out right now.
Yeah, you know what? It's going to be a very interesting year in 2009-2010. So, Matt, thank you for joining us on short notice. I appreciate your time. Hey, have a great weekend. Hey, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will, Dave. All right, thanks a lot. Anytime, man.
Matt Connolly joining us from the UCSB Daily Nexus, breaking down the NBA draft, and the man who made it to Bethpage Black as an amateur after walking on as a sophomore at UCSB's golf team. The man, Scott Lewis, and a great story. And if you get a chance, go to dailynexus.com and read the article that Matt wrote about Scott Lewis. I mean, it is a fantastic read. You'll love it. It's a great feel-good story of the year. It could be a movie, I think, if the movie was like 5 minutes. Thanks again for joining us here in the city. I appreciate your time. Have a good weekend, everybody. Enjoy life. And we'll be back here with more stuff next week. Thanks again. Take care. We'll see you next time.